Yeah. Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Shandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
All right, well, good morning. It is very strange to be in a different place than the movie theater, and I'm so used to like looking up at people. You may catch me just doing this, and you think he's worshiping. I'm really just preaching at whoever is usually sitting up there. So I want to start off today telling you this is a true story. Okay, this actually happened to me. It's super gross. In fact, let me just prepare you in advance. Today's going to be gross. There's going to be some gross stuff, so just be ready for it. So I used to travel in a band, and we would stop and eat any place that we could that sounded interesting. And so we had a phase where we stopped at Chinese buffets all the time. Chinese buffets are great, right? So we stopped at this one Chinese buffet in Kentucky or somewhere like that. I don't even know. A place probably a Chinese buffet should not be. And we go in, and we're just stacking up our plates with food. And we make our first run, and, you know, you eat. Because, like, if you're like me, you get to the Chinese buffet, you feel like I have to sprint to the buffet because I don't want anybody to beat me. It's like a competition of some kind. I'm afraid they're going to get that last, you know, crab rangoon, and I'll have to break their wrist and take it. You know, all sorts of stuff. And so we go into this Chinese buffet. We eat our first full plates, which is the warm-up plate. And then I go back up for my second plate, and I head up to the buffet, and I'm hitting the general chicken and kind of lo mein noodles area and the rice. I'm trying to decide what I'm going to get. And I decide I'm going to get some lo mein noodles. And so I grab the spoon, and I put it in the lo mein noodles. And as soon as I kind of scoop it up, a cockroach scurries up out of the noodles, across the bar, and then down onto the ground, and is just gone. Now, here's the thing. Like, I don't know if you've ever been in, like, a traumatic life or death experience, but I was frozen. I was like, I couldn't scream. I couldn't do anything. I just watched this thing. I couldn't even, like, kill it. I was so horrified, and I saw it run away, and I was like, the only thing I can do is grab one of the guys who works here and let him know so he can do something about it. So I go over here, and I grab the guy. I was like, dude, and I'm just like, I'm going to tell you this on the down low because I don't want to cause a panic and everybody run for the doors. But I was just getting some lo mein noodles, and a cockroach literally ran up out of the dish of food and then scrambled away on the floor. And he's like, oh, okay, thanks. And I was like, okay, cool. So I did my duty. I kind of stepped back a sec, and I watched him. And he finished doing what he was doing, and then he just kind of went back in the kitchen, and I never saw him again. Eventually, someone came out, and they took those noodles out and replaced it, but that was it. And I was like, I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, that is so disgusting that a cockroach would climb out of that buffet. And so, I mean, again, I did what anybody else would do. I don't want to be rude, so I finished my meal. And would you have not kept eating? Okay, let's do that. Let me get a feel for the room, just like a grossometer test, just to get a pulse on the room of things that are gross. If you're at a restaurant and your server brings you your drink and they have the thumb in the glass and set it on your table, do you drink it? Yes. The kids are saying yes, they're fools, they don't know. Okay, if you're at a friend's house and their dog, you hear it in the bathroom, drinking out of the toilet, you know the noise, and then the dog comes out and it wants to jump up and lick you, do you let that dog lick you?
No.
Well, that's weird. If you go into the bathroom here at NCHS after service and you see someone come out of a stall or come out of a urinal and they're like, oh, hey, buddy, how are you doing? And they walk up and they try to shake your hand before they wash theirs. Do you do that?
Yes.
Wow. Like, I'm surprised that all of you are here at church today because you are an intolerant group. Which is good because today we're going to talk about intolerance. So we're in the middle of a message series called Uncommon God. And here's the whole deal with this message series. There's all sorts of ideas about who Jesus is. And if you poll anyone in the United States, everybody knows who Jesus is. And everybody has different ideas about what he stands for or what he wants or who he is. And so in the middle of this series, what we decided to do is if we're followers of Jesus at Compass Church, which we are, I figured it'd probably be good for us to know that we are following the right Jesus, that we're not just building our lives following this idea of Jesus, but that we understand who is Jesus, what does he stand for, and so kind of do away with some of the common misperceptions of who Jesus is and really know him in all of his uncommonness. And one of the big question marks about Jesus has to do, I think, with the outcomes of what he wants to see happen in people's lives. Less about the things that we do and more about the things that he wants to see happen in our lives. What does he want our life to look like after he is involved in our lives? And so if we go back and look at human history and history of the church, I think we would probably, it'd be easy for us to get this idea that as the church has navigated through history, that Jesus is someone that is really just about punishing people. That Jesus is about punishing sin and identifying people who are doing things that are bad, doing things that are wrong, doing things that are socially unacceptable, and then punishing them. I mean, it was not that long ago historically that a person who was divorced was excommunicated from the church. So were you to get a divorce, which again, in religious terms in those days was a pretty big deal. Were you to get divorced, you're gone. You have no place in the church at all. And ancient history up through today, we can see the church has really just taken public hardline stances, really public hardline stances on lots of big sin, doing thing wrong issues. The church has taken hardline stances on alcohol. It's taken hardline stances on abortion, on divorce, on gay marriage. The church has taken hardline stance on godliness and integrity of our the leaders of our country, at least until lately. Sorry, I just want to see. I really just want to see what's going to happen. I said that. Don't throw anything. So that's one historical idea. I got hissed. That's the first time I've ever been hissed. So that's kind of this one idea of who Jesus is and the outcomes that he wants to see happen in our lives. But there's this other kind of perception about the outcomes that Jesus wants in our lives. That's a more modern revelation of who he is. And it's as people have discovered kind of the accepting nature of who Jesus is. We've reevaluated Jesus and uncovered the fact that Jesus he loved people as they were, right? And he accepted them as they were and as they came to them. And he didn't judge them. He just loved them. And what Jesus really wants, the outcome, is for us to do the same. Jesus just doesn't judge or discriminate based on who people are or based on the things they do. He just loves them, accepts them, and he wants us to do the same. And as long as we as followers of Jesus just value and respect and don't harm anybody else, then we're kind of fulfilling everything that we think that Jesus wants, the outcome that he wants in our lives. The problem with these two views is that they are completely at odds with each other. They totally oppose themselves, this idea of Jesus as someone who wants to be a punisher of sin, and Jesus, the acceptor of everyone, and he doesn't even really care what you do. It's not his place to judge. He just wants us all to be loved. And so the question I want to ask today in figuring out who is the real uncommon Jesus that we follow is, which is it? Which Jesus is the right Jesus? And so we're going to look at probably a fairly familiar story to many of you, and we're going to look at John chapter 8. And this is what happens. Jesus returned to the Mount of Olives, but early the next morning, he was back again at the temple. Jesus traveled around all the time. He was coming in and out of Jerusalem and out of these small towns, and he was always teaching. And anytime he was in Jerusalem, he would go to the temple, the big Jewish mega church, and he would teach out there. So a crowd soon gathered, and he sat down, and he taught them. As he was speaking, the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees, they brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery. The teachers of religious law and the Pharisees, they were so against Jesus. Jesus threatened their power. He threatened what they stood for. And they really wanted to do everything that they could to get rid of Jesus. And as a result, they were always trying to find ways to trap him, to trick him, to get him into doing something that would make him lose the support of the popular vote of the people. And so they took this woman who they caught in the act of adultery. They put her in front of the entire crowd. "Teacher," they said to Jesus, "this woman was caught in the act of adultery. Now the law of Moses, the law that all of us good Jewish people follow, it says this. It says that we should stone her. We should throw rocks at her until she dies. What do you say?" And then scripture even tells us this, John, who's writing this, who witnessed it, who was one of Jesus' disciples. John says that they were, just in case we don't get it, they're trying to trap him into saying something that they could use against him. But Jesus just stooped down and wrote in the dust with his finger. So the Pharisees and the teachers of religious law, they present this woman who's been caught in the act of adultery, in the middle of it, which I don't know how you do that, but okay, that's messed up. So they catch her, they bring her to Jesus, and they're like, okay, Jesus, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. That is a heinous sin. I mean, back then, sexual sin, particularly adultery in Jewish society, was a massive, massive big deal. This is the type of thing that gets you killed. And so they put this woman in front of Jesus, and they're, okay, Jesus, here's what we want to know. Are you pro-behavior? Are you pro-punishing sin? Or are you pro-tolerance? What's it going to be, Jesus? Are you okay with sin? Or do you want sin to be punished? What's it going to be, Jesus? Which one is it? Are you pro-sin or are you pro-God's law? Now, the Pharisees, they know this. If they can trap Jesus picking a side, if they can say, Jesus says, you know what? I'm totally for tolerance, and so we shouldn't do that to her. Just let her go. No big deal. Then all the people who believe in God's law, who believe in a standard that God's laid out, are going to be like, well, I can't follow this dude. If Jesus says, you know what, throw rocks at her until she's dead, all of the people who follow Jesus, the marginalized, the people who are poor, the people who are broken, then they're going to be like, oh, wait a minute, maybe this isn't the guy that we thought he was. And even more so, that was the Pharisees' position. And so they get to say, look, Jesus is like us. And they get to tuck Jesus under their wing, and they get to look like they are the actual leaders rather than this Jesus guy. And so they put this trap in front of Jesus. Are you pro-behavior? Pro-behavior modification, or are you pro-tolerance? And this is what happened. They kept demanding an answer. So he stood up and said, all right, you can throw rocks at her, you can stone her, but let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. So tell you what, we can do this, but if you've never sinned, why don't you pick up a stone and you throw it first? And then Jesus does this. He gets back down in the dirt and he starts writing in the dirt again. And when Jesus' accusers heard this, like, this messed with their heads, right? Because, like, I imagine that all they could think is like, oh, shoot. Okay, I know I'm not perfect. I know I've screwed up. I know I've sinned. I've never committed adultery, which deserves death, and she deserves to die. But, wow, okay, if I do this, then I'm saying that I'm sinless, and that's putting me on par with God. I can't put myself on par with God in front of all these people because that's blasphemy. And so Jesus just traps these guys in their own noose. And when they heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest. And I'm sure it's the oldest because they probably committed the most sins in their lifetime. Until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. All the accusers are gone. The crowd is still there. This woman is on the ground, and Jesus is the last one left with her. And then Jesus stood up again, and he said to the woman, he said, where are your accusers? Don't even one of them condemn you? No, Lord, she said. And then Jesus said this. He said, neither do I. Where are your accusers? Is not even one of them here to accuse you? No, I guess they left. Well, then neither do I. This is amazing, because what we see here, what we see Jesus do in this moment, so we grasp this, this is an absolute act of love that Jesus does. In the face of the intolerance, in the face of the anger of the Pharisees, Jesus stands up. And he says, you know what? I'm going to take a different path. And he says, I'm going to love you and I'm going to embrace you. And in the face of all of this, he said, I'm not here to accuse or condemn you. That's not what I'm about. This is, I mean, in all scripture, I think this story is tolerance at its purest, isn't it? In its purest form, Jesus embracing a woman who's committed a sin that to the religious of the day was just completely anathema, something that was so outrageous in the religious society of his day that Jesus chose love over judgment. And so if we're trying to figure out who Jesus is and we're looking at this passage, we have to conclude that Jesus in this moment, that he's uncommon in his tolerance of people. And that Jesus is uncommon in his tolerance of his people, especially those who haven't followed the path that those religious elite, that those maybe who've been raised in religion and raised in faith would normally follow. Jesus, I mean, he is uncommon in his tolerance. There's no way to look at this passage and not see that that's who Jesus is. The story continues. And Jesus said, does anyone accuse you? The woman says no, and he says, neither do I. We wish he would have stopped there, but he keeps going. And he says, go and sin no more. Okay, so now we need to wait a second because, you know, we've stated Jesus is uncommon in his tolerance for people, right? I mean, it's outrageous the amount of love and tolerance that he showed that this woman who was caught in the act of adultery. I mean, let's just think about this for a minute. You know, we hear this woman committed adultery, and we just kind of stop there. That's an interesting, you know, segment of the story. We don't know any of the background. We don't know who she had adultery with. We don't know if she had an affair with a married man who had a family and kids and a wife, and she came in and she destroyed that home. We don't know if she was married and had a husband and kids of her own, and what she's done is explode an atom bomb in more than one family with her actions. We don't know anything about that. And yet, you know, Jesus is showing this perfect tolerance, this woman. He's accepting her, and he's welcoming her in spite of all of that. But then he says this. He says, go and sin no more. And what's weird about this is that sounds an awful lot like judgment to me. If someone says, hey, why don't you not do that? What I hear is, you're telling me that I'm doing something wrong. You're making a decision that what I'm doing is wrong. And I feel like when Jesus says, go and sin no more, that he's saying that what you're doing was wrong, that feels a lot like judgment to me. Kind of sounds a little bit like intolerance, like Jesus was maybe putting on a show, you know, for everyone to show how accepting he was. But then he's like, listen, I love you. You know, like sometimes we do with our kids. Like there have been times like when I'm in a public place and my kids are out of line. I'm like, oh, come here, buddy. Hey, let's calm down. Hey, I'm gonna break your neck if you do not stop that right now. And I imagine Jesus, he's like, you know what? Neither do I accuse you. Now you better not do that again or I swear I'm gonna. How does that work? Jesus is identifying her actions as sin, judgment. And he's telling her to stop it, intolerance. Judging, you're a sinner, you're doing something that's wrong. Intolerance, I'm not gonna accept you to continue living like this and keep doing it. It sounds a lot more like judgment than love. Now this is so complicated and confusing, right? When you think about how does he demonstrate this amazing act of love and tolerance and then, you know, do this last thing. We wish that he would leave this last part off the end because, you know, we live in a culture where the only real sin is intolerance, right? I mean, the only real sin that we can commit or that anyone can commit is not tolerating what someone else's decisions, someone else's choices, the things that they want to do. That's the biggest sin in our culture, intolerance. But I think if you take a step back, you really realize we're intolerant of a lot of things, really. So if someone has their little toddler and, you know, and he's just got those big yellow snot bubbles blowing out of his nose, and they're all over his hands, and you know, he's wanting to run around your house and touch everything. What are you gonna do? I just wanna tolerate that. No, sick. You're not gonna let that snotty little kid touch everything. That's disgusting. I'm not gonna tolerate that. No one would say, you need to be more tolerant of my son when he's wiping snot on your things. No one's gonna say, hey, Chris, you need to be more tolerant of Chinese buffets when cockroaches crawl out of the buffet because you don't know how hard it is to run a Chinese buffet. You just need to tolerate, okay, yes, ma'am. More noodles. You know, no one's saying that. We are intolerant of many, many things. And the fact is, we are intolerant of things that we understand are bad for us. We're intolerant of the things that we understand are not good for us. Those are the things that we don't tolerate. Those are the things that we are intolerant of. But the thing is, we don't always understand what's bad for us. We don't always totally grasp the things that are gonna hurt us. But when we do understand, we'll write them off. So take this for example. President Garfield was the second president of the United States who was assassinated. He was assassinated about 20 years after Abraham Lincoln. And Garfield got shot, the bullet went into his abdomen and it kind of lodged back behind his pancreas. And all the doctors swarmed President Garfield. They're like, we gotta help him, we gotta take care of him. And this is what's amazing. Science tells us today that if the doctors had completely left President Garfield alone, he would have survived. The bullet would have stayed lodged in his body, but he would have totally survived. But instead, this is what happened. Upwards of 12 doctors with unsanitized hands, because then they didn't understand germs, they didn't know that was a big deal, all stuck their unsanitized hands into, my wife is like, ew, sick, stop it. 12 doctors stuck their unsanitized hands into his wound to find out what's going on. They used unsanitized instruments to probe around. This is the craziest part, right? Because we live in a society where we grasp germs. We get germs. You know, you go in for surgery and you see the doctor not washing his hands, you're like, hold up, let's try this again. But like, when President Garfield got shot, they laid him on the sidewalk, the ground at the train station, and that's where they started doing their first probing. A dirty, disgusting train station floor. You know, so the man died 80 days after he was shot because he was just riddled with infection because of all the doctors who had stuck their dirty hands, their dirty instruments into the wound in his body. And he would have survived if they would have left him completely alone. He would have been fine. But listen, they didn't know. They didn't understand that those things were bad for them. And so because they didn't understand that what germs were and they didn't understand that those could kill you, they didn't have an intolerance for those things. But now, man, nowadays, we went to go visit Bruce and Karen in the hospital when their baby was born, and she was a preemie. And bro, you go in there in Peoria into the preemie ward, and you have to stop outside, and like you have to scrub. You have to pull up your sleeves, and you got to scrub your arms up to the elbow for like 2 minutes straight. And they give you this cool sponge with all these little, you know, plastic fingers sticking out and get under your nails. And they have a timer. You have to set the timer and you are scrubbing and you are scrubbing and you are scrubbing. Why? Because there's babies in there and we are intolerant of the things that could hurt those babies. We're not going to tolerate it because those things are bad for them. Once we understand that something isn't good for us, we become intolerant of it. And you know what? That's okay. That's okay. You see, Jesus committed a perfect act of love when he accepted this woman who was caught in the act of adultery. And when he embraced this woman who the religious leadership had brought to him and was accusing her and trying to condemn her, and he refused to do it. That was a perfect act of love. And then Jesus committed a second and equally perfect act of love when he told her to stop doing the thing that was killing her. It wasn't an act of judgment. It wasn't an act of intolerance. It was an act of love. And many have this common view of Jesus that he's okay with sin. That, you know what, Jesus just wants us to love each other. And he just wants us to embrace each other and just not hurt anyone. And if we can just live in a world where we just do that, then Jesus is gonna be great. And we tend to think that Jesus is okay with sin. Jesus is okay, whatever we wanna choose, whatever behaviors we wanna do, he's okay with that. But that couldn't be further from the truth. A doctor is not intolerant of his patient. A doctor is intolerant of the disease that's trying to kill his patient. An exterminator is not intolerant of damaged homes. An exterminator doesn't want to come in and just wipe them out. An exterminator is intolerant of the pests that are destroying and damaging homes. The commonality between both the doctor and the exterminator is they want to remove the thing that's causing disease. They want to remove the thing that's causing damage to a person's body or to a person's home so that it can be made right and it can be restored. And that's Jesus. Jesus isn't okay with sin just because he wants us to love each other. Jesus embraces us exactly as we are, as filthy and as messed up and as gross as our lives are, in the exact same way that he embraced this woman who had committed a sin that literally would have had her cast out of Jewish society. But then he said, you've got to get rid of this thing that's killing you. I love you, but you can't tolerate that in your life anymore. Just like the doctor and the exterminator, Jesus doesn't want to destroy the thing that's damaged. He wants to restore it. He wants to deal with what's breaking it. Here's our main deal today. Jesus isn't okay with sin because it damages something that he loves, us. The doctors at the preemie ward aren't okay with germs walking through their doors because they're not all right with something coming in and damaging the things that they care so much about, those innocent, precious babies. And Jesus is not okay with sin in our lives because sin damages us. Now, the Pharisees, they thought if we can get Jesus to be like us and he can sit up on his high, you know, throne and he can say, you're sinners and you're bad and you need to be punished and you need to be judged. Jesus is like, that's not me. Jesus says, I want them to come to me. I'm welcoming these people to come to me. I'm embracing them because Jesus is both for us and against sin. He's for us and against the sin in our lives. In his perfect love, he embraces us in our sin and then he leads us out of it. And that's the distinction. Like, that's how these two things can come together in this story. Jesus embraces us when we're in our sin for the purpose, not of letting us just sit in it, not in the purposes. It, like, I don't just hug my son when he's a baby and he has a, you know, a poopy diaper and go, I just love you so much. I hug him and I'm like, let's get that junk off of you because it's gross. And that's what Jesus is doing. Jesus embraces us when we're messed up because he loves us. And then he says, let me lead you out of this. I mean, questions, are you okay with sin? Because Jesus isn't. He's not. Maybe you're here and you're like, okay, Chris, I know that Jesus isn't okay with sin, and I'm good with that. But like, my sin, you know, me and Jesus have an understanding on that, and so I know that that person's sin has to go, because that's messed up. But as long as I kind of keep mine in my own little bubble, you know, I think Jesus and I are cool with it. But that's a common Jesus. That's not the Jesus who came to set us free and to lead us out. In fact, I'm going to read you just two more passages. 1 John 3. Now, John, who wrote the story of the woman who we read, who got caught in the act of adultery, who documented that story, this is him writing, and he says this. He says, dear children, don't let anyone deceive you about this. People are going to try to tell you that this isn't true. Don't let them lie to you because it's a lie. When people do what's right, it shows that they are righteous, even as Christ is righteous. But when people keep on sinning, it shows that they belong to the devil. Don't be deceived. Don't be fooled into thinking that Jesus is okay with your sin because it's a lie. And he says this, the Son of God, he says, but when people keep on sinning, it shows they belong to the devil who's been sinning since the beginning. Those who have been born into God's family do not make a practice of sinning. Anyway, I'll just jump back. I missed this. But the Son of God, this is what Jesus came to do. The Son of God came to destroy the works of the devil. Jesus came to destroy the work, the damage, the pain of sin in our lives because God's life is in those who do not make a practice of sinning. This is what John says. So people who are followers of Jesus, us, they can't keep on sinning because they're children of God. And so now we can tell who children of God are and who are children of the devil because anyone who doesn't live righteously and doesn't love other believers doesn't belong to God. And that's like, dang, dude, John's coming up right out and he's saying, you know what? Jesus embraced you in your sin, but you keep sinning. Well, you're not a child of God. You're a child of the devil. And he just says it. And he says, don't be deceived into thinking that sin is not sin. Don't be deceived into thinking that you can keep living the way that you lived before you knew Jesus when he embraced you and brought you in because Jesus wants to fix what's broken in you and you cannot continue on the path that's continually breaking you over and over and over again if you are gonna follow Jesus. In the same way that I would never let a surgeon perform surgery without washing her hands, I can say the same thing. I can't continue sinning if I'm a follower of Jesus. I can't do it. Because I know. I know that this is gonna kill me. I know that this is bad for me. And if I don't know that, maybe I didn't even know who Jesus actually was in the first place. To do what could kill someone for a doctor and not washing their hands or not creating sterile surgical equipment, it would be malpractice. And it's spiritual malpractice for us to think that we can follow Jesus and still pursue and live in a life of sin. So let's get real. If you're living a life where sin is part of your everyday life, you need to stop it. If you gossip, stop it. If you're having sex outside of your marriage, you need to stop it. If you're looking at pornography, quit it. Don't do it anymore. If you are hoarding all of your resources and not living with open hands and you're living a selfish, greedy life, you need to cut it out. You need to stop it. If you are lying, cheating, stealing, anything that doesn't give honor to God, anything that would be a life of sin and growing in your life, stop it. That's what Jesus is saying. And John's telling us this, you have no excuse to keep sinning if you say that you are a son or a daughter of God.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.